Patrick Roan is an author, essayist, technology consultant, husband, and father living in St. Paul, Minnesota. Currently, Patrick now writes on how to make the world a better, friendlier, and stronger place. He joins us today in this episode of Let the Music Play podcast as we talk about the questions we must ask about the things we allow in our lives. I'm Ashton Gustafson, and welcome to Let the Music Play.
For me, it's a philosophy of you know, as I have a little mantra that goes, don't worry, do. If nothing can be done, don't worry.
Hey guys, Ashton Gustafson here, and welcome to another episode of Let the Music Play. This is where we chat about what it looks like and what it feels like and what it means to make music with our lives, our relationships, and our careers. Over the Christmas holidays, I had the opportunity to watch a documentary many of you have probably known about on Netflix called Minimalism. It kind of overviews two individuals called the Minimalists that have kind of started this movement that's kind of making its way across the United States about really one of the things we talk about all the time here, making our lives more and more about less and less. And there was an individual in this documentary named Patrick Roan. He wrote a book called Enough, and I've always thought that the magic number for our lives is enough. And so immediately, I tracked Patrick down, shot him an email, and said, hey, I think you've got some wisdom to teach us. So with that being said, we are joined today by Patrick Roan in freezing Minnesota. Patrick, how are you?
Yes. Oh, well, I'm inside of a house and warm for now, which is more than I can say for other people who may be in these temperate environments. It is currently -1. I'm sorry. It's one above. I was off by 2 degrees there. Yeah, it's actually 1 above with a -17 below wind chill, which is a vast improvement over what we woke up to, which was -7 with a -24.
When that happens where I'm from, the grocery aisles are empty. Like no one moves. No one moves.
Well, I'm originally from New Orleans, actually, so it's amazing that I'm up here, but. In New Orleans, the problem is that because it is mostly below sea level, most of the city, you can't really dig too deep. There's not a lot of basements and such, and a lot of the home surfaces are actually underneath the house and exposed. Your houses are kind of raised up off the ground. And so the problem you run into in New Orleans when the temperature drops below freezing is that all those water pipes and all that stuff bursts, all those gas pipes burst, and it can be a real problem. So, you know, hey, I get it. I know that it's all a matter of perspective, as all things are.
Well, beautiful. So I always begin these dialogues for our listeners to kind of gain some insight into who you are and your work in the world. When you introduce yourself as to the work that you're putting into the world, where do you begin?
Well, I usually say that I'm a writer, and my goal is to make the world a friendlier, stronger place through that work. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, that's pretty broad, and obviously it really depends on the audience. I mean, because I have kind of a lot of different hats I wear, so depending on who I'm speaking to, depends on how I answer that question. But yeah, when it comes to writing stuff, you know, they're like, oh, what do you write? Well, and I say, well, you know, Amazon puts it in the category of self-help, and since they sell the vast majority of my books, I can't argue with where they want to stick my stuff. But I guess it is, but not in that kind of, you know, the problem with self-help is that a lot of people think, oh, you know, touchy-feely, chicken soup for the soul sort of stuff, that Tony Robbins sort of stuff. And I'm like, no, my stuff is actually actionable, practical, doable, and comes from a place of questioning, of humility, and of understanding that people have lives. right?
Yeah.
And that everybody's situation is going to be different.
Right. Yeah, you know, I think that was my initial experience with you through the documentary and then into some of your writing is you give us eyes to see the world with. You give us new angles for awareness. And I think if there's anything, I can only speak for my generation, if there's anything that I know we desperately need, it's as many beautiful ahas as we can get. Because there's a lot of illusions we're fighting with.
And I think a lot of assumptions too, right? A lot of things that you've been told and you've just accepted as, well, that's just the way it is. But you know, the way I oftentimes like to put it is that truth itself is an illusion. It's perspective, right? And that even that is going to be a matter of the way in which you see things, the abilities in which you have to see them. You know, for instance, and generally it's a mutual agreement, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, right now, if you and I were both standing here, we'd both look at the sky and say that it was blue. The way that we've arrived at that shared belief is we first had to agree with, you know, thousands of years of people that have said that color we're going to call blue.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
The moment that I start calling that color red, you and I have a fundamental problem with how we can talk about the sky.
Right.
And if I'm blue-green colorblind, it might be always gray to me.
Yeah.
And so I can't even, you know, we can't even talk about the type of blue because I can't see it.
Right.
Right. You know, even truth itself is a series of understandings and agreements and mutual trust between people that they're going to start from the same perception.
Interesting. Very interesting. I like where this is going already. so let's, before we move further, tell me about your experience with the documentary. How did you originally get connected with The Minimalist?
So, you know, Josh and Ryan have been longtime internet friends of mine. You know, we kind of, for a long time, I had this site called Minimal Mac, which was really focused on simplicity and mindfulness in one's approach to technology, with a focus, obviously, with the name, as you can imagine, on Apple products, but was not wholly that. There was a lot there for everybody, and honestly, any of the basic principles you could apply anywhere. But it really was about, you know, trying to have people really ask questions about what they need out of these devices, out of these services. I think especially in, you know, the app era, where, you know, anything we could ask for is a touch away. It was even more important to, you know, bring a question about need and about what is enough to that new era and to this new world. And so, because of that, you know, we were traveling within the same circles,
gotcha.
I guess you could say. Kind of, you know, you know, and when it comes to like online relationships, you kind of find your tribe and hang out with
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. Yeah, I hear you.
My tribe is like Leo Balbata and Joshua Becker and, you know, and Josh and Ryan, the Minimalists, and, you know, and basically everyone that you saw in that film are people that like I've interacted with in some way, shape, or form. In any case, so they were doing this movie. They actually had a cut of it already that they had premiered at some film festivals, but they were like, yeah, I think we're missing something. I think we want to go, you know, I think we want to broaden this message a little bit. And, you know, would you mind if we, you know, flew out and interviewed you? I was like, no problem. just so happened, I can't remember whether it's Josh or Ryan. I think it's Josh. Josh's girlfriend, I guess, is from here, and they just happened to be out last Christmas for, you know, to visit her family for Christmas. And so they interviewed me on December 26th, you know, set up in my house and whatnot.
Wow.
And the thing that people have to know, and this actually might be an interesting angle to talk about, is that while I myself certainly subscribe to and try to practice within my own ability what is enough for me, my wife and my daughter, the people I live with, don't necessarily subscribe to the same ideas. And so here it is, like the day after Christmas, there's literally like, you know, there's, you know, Christmas presents and, you know, stuff everywhere. I mean, you know, it's just, you know, we hosted 12 people for Christmas and, you know, it was Christmas morning and, you know, we hadn't cleaned up yet. I warned them about that. And, you know, and so here we are in the middle of this 3-hour interview, because they actually interviewed me for 3 hours, and about 2.5 hours into it, my wife had taken my daughter out of the house to run errands, you know, do Christmas returns and exchanges and things like that, as one does on the 26th, handle up on some of those, you know, post-Christmas bargains, you know. So here they come in 2.5 hours in this interview, you know, about minimalism with all these shopping bags.
Their hands are full.
They're freaking poster childs of consumerism. You know, poster children, you know, came in and
this is what I'm fighting against.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, you know, that's obviously not shown, but it was a pretty funny moment. Yeah, so that just kind of gives you an idea of kind of, you know, where things are for us. And important for me to be, you know, I think, you know, to fully disclose that.
Totally.
You know, one of the reasons that I arrive at my philosophy of enough and promote that over, say, you know, minimalism, as I think, you know, for lack of a better term, it's been sold to people. Is that I think people have this idea that, you know, all of us minimalist people are people that, like, you know, we live in these, you know, sparse little tiny homes and, you
know, a closet with two hangers.
Count our 100 items that we own in the world diligently. And, you know, we have the 7 shirts all white hanging up in the closet, in the white closet, you know, in the White House. And, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just not, you know, and certainly not the way I live.
Yeah.
I live in a you know, almost 3,000 square foot Victorian home. You know, that is filled to the brim with stuff. Most of it's not mine, but but it's mine by marriage.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of the things that one of the compromises that you know one has to make, and when one actually wants to, I don't know, you know, live a life and has other people in that life and other people who may not necessarily agree with you know that way of living.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you have to decide, okay, where's the balance here? What's mm-hmm. enough for you? What's enough for me? And how is this going to work? You have to navigate all of that.
Yeah. So I'd love to ask you, because I think that's a great point. The documentary right now has, for lack of better terms, gone viral. There was a book last Christmas. I can't remember what it was, but it was about like cleaning up your house.
That would be The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up by Marie Kondo.
Okay, that was it, right? It was in my wife, like half of the things in our house were thrown away the next day. But I think I think that there really needs to be dialogue around. Look, you watch a documentary like this, you read a book like yours called Enough, you watch or you read the Tidying Up book. At the heartbeat of this, it's a posture to how do you perceive yourself in the world? How do you operate? How do you make decisions? It isn't so much this rah-rah, throw everything away.
No.
It's more of like, wake up, think through this. You don't need to be in the matrix. How would you riff on that?
Well, and, you know, and it's really just about asking a simple question, which is why, you know, why, you know, I have a little space heater right next to me. I'm recording this up on in our third floor kind of lofty area, and we don't have any heat venting run up here because it was an attic formerly. And so, you know, why do I have this space here? Well, because the house heat doesn't quite make it up here. And especially when it's a cold day like this, you need a space heater in order to heat up this space.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
The obvious answer.
Yeah.
Right. But I think there are many other things that are a lot less obvious. And, you know, I run into this oftentimes with my wife quite a bit, where, you know, I will, just today, I organize, we've got like two bins of tea, these two largish bins of tea. And I, you know, over the past year or so, after the last time I organized it, it's kind of gotten, you know, certain things put back in the wrong place or whatever, you know, and we have all this tea.
What are we doing with all this tea?
What are we doing with all this tea? And I know what we're doing with all this tea. Some of that tea in that bin is 20-something years old, yeah. Easily. Because my wife lived in Southeast Asia for a couple of years in her 20s. And about half of the tea that we have is actually from those travels.
Wow.
You know? And I know when the wife walks in the door, I'm going to say, so I organized the tea bed and I, you know, we came across all that Chinese tea. Like, what's our plan with that?
Right.
Like, you know, is this really, are we ever going to drink this? You know, is it being held on for sentimental reasons? You know, or maybe, you know, since I've been drinking more tea lately, you've been drinking more tea lately, you know, we can put that stuff kind of up front and make a pledge. Say, okay, we're only going to drink this super old stuff that, you know, that we have even no clue what it is because whatever writing is on there is Chinese. You know, and try it. And if we don't like it, we can maybe give it away to someone who's into tea and who would really appreciate it.
Right.
That's a conversation I'm going to have with her this evening. My point being that, that this is really what it's about. It's really about just simply making sure that the things that you have for a reason, a reason you've determined, even if that reason isn't a quote-unquote good one. That's not for anyone else to decide but you. A lot of things that my wife holds on to, she holds on to because not having it makes her uncomfortable. Hmm. It makes her nervous, right? You know, this idea that, you know, the day is going to come along and we're going to wish we had this. And that's, you know, and I have to at least acknowledge that feeling.
Right.
I give that feeling, you know, weight. And while I may have a different opinion, I may have a different feeling, I can't say that mine is better than hers or is, you know, I mean, because quite honestly, really, who's this tea in our pantry really hurting?
Right. Yeah.
It could sit there for another 20. It sat there for 20 years. It could sit there for 20 more years. It's not a big deal.
Right.
Yeah. This is not, as I like to say, this is not a hill I want to die on.
Yeah.
Right.
Totally.
And I think that's what it really comes down to, is it really comes down to at least taking the time to ask the question.
Right. And I think, And I think this leads perfectly into, a message that you gave not long ago, and I watched it on YouTube, where you basically spoke on three questions that lead to an intentional life.
Yeah.
And I thought this was brilliant. You want to walk us through kind of these three questions that you use and how you found them to be useful?
Yeah. So, so the first of these is, what problem does this solve?
So if something comes in your life, or there's some, kind of walk us through the scenario.
Yeah. If you know, if you're out and about, and you, like my wife, you see something free, cause she, that's her favorite price in the world. you know, you see this thing that's for free. The first thing, one of the first things I ask her is, okay, well, you know, what problem is that going to solve? Yeah. Right. And, you know, cause there's really a couple of types of problems, right? There's a problem that we know we have, like, hey, I have this problem. I need something to fix it. I know what I need, and this will fix that problem. Then there's the problems we didn't know we had. You know, I would say that that Apple has built an entire company based on that idea, you know, which is, how could you have known that you needed a supercomputer in your pocket until someone actually invented a supercomputer that fits in your pocket, right?
Without buttons, mind you.
with no buttons, right? And so it's one of those things where you're walking around with your flip phone and you're like, oh, if I had that, I could check my email everywhere. Not to say that, trust me, I'm not advocating smartphones. I'm just using it as an example. Yeah. That's an example of a problem that no one could have conceived that they had because they hadn't yet seen the solution.
Right.
And so, you know, that's question number one. What problem does this solve? Because if it's not solving a problem, then everything else is moot, right? If it's not fulfilling a need, everything else is moot. And, or desire, for that matter. Desires are okay, too, to a certain extent.
Yeah, and honestly, the aha lights come on moment for me in this presentation that you did is when you said, this isn't just connected to stuff that we allow into our lives. And you went relationships, emotions. And I was like,
Oh my goodness.
I mean, I hadn't ever minimalism connecting that to emotions and what we allow in our lives. That blew my mind.
Yeah. When was the last time you were angry with somebody?
Yes.
What problem did that anger solve?
Wow.
Right? Does being angry solve the problem, right? I mean, this is how I avoid almost every disagreement with my wife, is I ask myself that question, right? You know, is my being angry that she wants another couch to go with the three we have in our garage that we have no space for in our home, but yet she goes out and she gets it anyway because it was free and on a curb, that doesn't, my anger about that actually doesn't solve that. Hmm. Right. You know, what does solve it is me sitting down and saying, okay, what problem does this solve for you? Hmm. Right. Where does this belong?
Right.
Which is another question. We'll get to that because that's number three, right?
Yeah.
So number two, you know, talking about that is, you know, how little can I get away with, right? You know, I think there's this problem in our society where, you know, we want to see how much we can get away with, right?
Yeah.
But I like to think it's more about how little can I get away with. You know, what is the smallest possible way I can accomplish a goal? It's one of the reasons I'm such a big fan of pen and paper, right?
Yeah.
Because I can whip out a pen and paper and capture a thought as a writer that's highly important to me faster than any smartphone can help me right now.
Yep. Absolutely.
Right?
Yep.
Faster than a computer can help me, right? Anytime I, you know, have to take something out of my pocket and wait 3 seconds while I hold my thumb in the right position, I could have written that down with a notebook and pen in my pocket, right?
Absolutely.
And so it's like, okay, to accomplish this thing I need to do, which is be able to capture ideas as they come to me because I have a little tiny brain.
Hmm.
little small, little tiny brain, and it's filled to the brim with stuff. And there's no room for any more stuff. So if I don't write it down, I forget it. And there's nowhere to put it. Yeah. So I need to solve this problem. How little can I get away with when it comes to the solution?
And a lot of that second question revolves around time.
Yeah. Well, because, you know, time is perhaps the only universal truth. I don't know what your faith is. I don't know what your
walk with me on that, because I'd love to hear your insight on this.
But all of that aside, everything in this universe is based on time.
Yeah.
It has a time limit. It was created. It will end. Alpha, Omega.
Yeah.
And so because of that, you know, when you look at that, you tiny speck human on this little tinier speck called a planet that we have named Earth, in this even tinier speck called the solar system that's amongst this really tiny speck called a galaxy that is literally amongst billions and billions. We can't even fathom it. We haven't even counted them all yet.
Yeah.
Galaxies.
And it's expanding.
Right. In the universe, that's expanding. Guess what? Everything in it shares.
Time. Yeah. Yeah. Well.
Every bit of that will end. Every bit that exists will cease to exist. We've got 100 years, give or take. Time is the most valuable resource in the universe. Hmm. It is unreplenishable. And in the grand scheme of things, we're not even we're barely a breath.
Yep.
Right? And so any amount that you can save, any amount that you can recapture, you can get back, you can do other things with, any amount that you can have to choose this thing over that thing is the most valuable thing in the world. And this is the reason why I probably don't work for anyone. Why I work for myself, because despite the fact that I charge by the hour in certain circumstances, that money's a construct.
Yeah, right.
You know, and that its value in relationship to time is moot. It is so insignificant. It's not even funny. So yeah, I refuse to trade my time for money, because there's no amount of money that you could use to pay for my time in reality.
Wow.
Money is a construct to arrive at value and trust.
Hmm.
Right. In any case, so there's that. That's my speech on time. This is the reason why it is important to ask these questions. This is the reason why it's important to make these choices and decisions, because they save you time.
So question number one was, what problem does this solve? Question number two, how little can I get away with? And then question number three.
Shortest, quickest way I can get to this thing that I am trying to solve.
Yeah.
And question number three is really, where does this belong?
Hmm.
Where does this belong in your home? Where does this belong in your life? You know, that also works with the relationship and anger piece, right? Mm-hmm. Where does this relationship belong in my life?
Mm-hmm.
Right? I have, my best friend in the world is a woman. She was my best ma'am at my wedding. Mm-hmm. I love her completely and dearly. We had a chance at one point in our now decades long relationship to actually become a thing, right? You know, like a, you know, I don't know, to try this whole maybe there's a there, maybe this friendship could be something more. And we mutually decided that no, that's not where this relationship belonged.
Hmm.
right? That's not where it belonged in our life, right? That it belonged as it was. Because if we had made that wrong decision, if we had made the decision that, no, we wanted to give that a go, we probably would not be friends today.
Interesting.
Right? And so that's why this is an important question to ask, not just for the stuff, but for your anger, for your desire, yeah, for your worry, for your needs, for your love, for your hope. And, you know, yeah, it works for stuff too. Where does this belong?
That's so good. Where does this fear belong? Where does this hope belong?
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow, that is so, so good. So you've got those three questions. I want to ask you about a couple of these books you've written. One being Enough.
Yes.
I know there's always like a moment, be it a good moment, a tragic moment, a eureka moment. What caused you to sit down and start typing a book called Enough?
Well, I mean, it really came out of the work I was already doing at Minimal Mac. But I wanted to kind of expand on it more, a little bit deeper. I'd say even more abstract at the same mm-hmm. time, mm-hmm. right? Because even with Minimal Mac, I saw initially when I started putting some of these ideas out there, and it was probably kind of somewhat my fault too, because, you know, I think there's this danger when you're really excited about something to go all the way one direction, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, oh my gosh, you know, this whole simplicity thing I can apply to the number of, you know, little service icons in my menu bar. You know, how few of those can I have? Can I make it to just have nothing there. You know, let me see. How can I hack it so that, yeah. And you can go that direction, right? But but then there's the other direction. The other direction is the people that, you know, are comfortable having it so full that it runs off into the, you know, into the other side of the bar and like,
second,
you know,
screen.
Right, exactly. Or second, right. You know, and then there's that, right?
Yeah.
When really what we're all looking for is, okay, I need to find what balance works for me,
mm-hmm.
right? And the funny thing about that is that this process of mindfulness and introspection when it comes to these ideas can change as your own personal conditions change too, right?
Absolutely.
It makes no...
There's flow, right?
There's this, and your life changes. The conditions change, right? What worked for me when I was 24 and stopped working for me at 35 might work for me again at 49, but I don't know. The only way to know is to keep kind of coming back to these questions, keep coming back to, you know, this idea, this thing that I needed for a certain period of time, I may no longer need.
Yeah.
And it may just be sitting there taking up space because I haven't bothered to say, you know, is this still solving a problem?
Yeah.
You know, could I get away without it? You know, if it is still solving a problem and I can't get away without it, well, where does it belong? Because obviously sitting here, it's not, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's not doing anything, right? And so, yeah, it really comes out of this idea that that finding enough is not like discovering something and moving along. Finding enough is a constant rethinking, re-questioning at a low level. This is not something you have to like actively do.
Yeah.
Just something that, like, you know, every once in a while, you know, sit down in a room and just take a look around and say, hey, is everything where it belongs?
Mm-hmm.
Is everything here still solving a problem? You know,
too little doesn't work.
And too little doesn't work because, you know, now you've created a needless want and desire, right?
Right.
And I'm a Buddhist, and so we Buddhists, we believe that like want and desire are not necessarily good things. They're kind of like the root of all evil. So and so yeah. Now
is that tied to like greed? Is
No, okay. I think they're, you know, I think it's, you know, the idea is that, you know, is that all suffering is based in desire, right? Either desire for something to change, desire for something to be different, desire for more, desire for less, you know, desire for that which one cannot change, and or there for things that you can but you aren't for whatever reason, right? Mm-hmm. That is a matter of figuring out, like, okay, what is at the root of this desire? What is the thing I'm hoping to fix here? What is the thing that, you know, is it something I can change? If the answer is yes, then isn't that energy better put in taking action to change something?
Yeah.
And if the answer is no, then what? Where does that worry and that desire and that want and that need come from?
Interesting.
Right? Yeah. Because if where does it belong? Because and what problem is it solving? Because if it's not doing any of those things, then it is useless energy and should just you can let it go.
Right.
You can learn to let it go.
That's kind of where I was going with that. Is it sounds like this is an attachment detachment conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But guess what? Your life is a detachment attachment conversation.
Speak on that a little bit.
Ten days before Christmas, a close friend of the family, someone who literally was instrumental in bringing my daughter into this world because she was our doula, killed herself.
Wow.
That's detachment. Mm-hmm. Right? Attachment and detachment is recognizing that, once again, we are all tied together by this thing called time. Mm-hmm. Mine is different from yours. But one thing I can guarantee is that if I'm talking to you, if you exist, if I can see you, you will be gone. Mm-hmm. It may be tomorrow. It may be 10 years from now. It may be 50 years from now. But I can tell you, you will be gone. As will everything else in this world, as will the Earth itself, as will the sun it revolves around, as will the galaxy that it exists within.
Everything is changing. Everything's moving.
Not changing, moving. It's disappearing.
That
we are, you know, from the time we are born, from the time we are creative, we are on a steady, never-ending cease towards non-existence, towards death, at least in this universe, at least in this sphere of existence.
Right.
We can talk if you want about whether there's a heaven or hell or blah, blah, blah. Mood issue. Take it off the table. Don't care.
The earthly plane. Talk about
is in this reality that we live in, that's the one thing that unites us.
Yeah.
And that if we don't learn to be detached, if we don't learn the ability to detach from things, we will spend our lives in a state of constant suffering.
Hmm. And if we don't allow that suffering to transform us,
or to maybe cause change, or to maybe cause, you know, but there are some things you can't change. I can't change whether you live or die. Right?
Yeah.
And so it's to let that go. That's something I can't change, but here's what I can change. I can change the quality of this moment for you.
Right.
You know, and I can change that by my actions, by my words, you know, by my friendliness, you know. I could change it back the other direction if I was a complete a-hole, right? Mm-hmm. If I was mean, if I was nasty, if I was, you know, but, you know, that's going to, you know, that's not only going to change you, it's going to change me,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm. Accepting the moment in its fullness.
And it's a choice.
Yeah. Accepting the moment.
It's a choice.
No labeling, yeah. Categorizing, critiquing.
Well, but and even more so, accepting that this moment might be all I have. And so what's the choice I want to make? How do I want to spend it?
Yeah. 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 A very redeeming presence. Beautiful. So walk me through as we wrap up here, because it sounds like mindfulness, especially, you know, you've written a book called Mindfulness for Mere Mortals.
yeah.
Tell me how some of the habits you found necessary to maintaining inner peace. Knowing where things belong, knowing, you know, having those internal dialogues.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think the, you know, perhaps the first one really is that, my desires for change, for anything, whether I want my wife to change, whether I want my daughter to change, whether I want my home to change, whether I want, you know, the books I have scattered on the floor here next to me because I haven't finished organizing them because we're making room for more books for my daughter. I you know, I'm not changing that.
No.
You know, if you know, for me, if you wanted to tell me, like, okay, school is gone, dead, there will be no school anymore, there will be no, you know, how is your daughter going to fare in this world? I'm going to say, well, she's surrounded by all these books. She's going to be just fine.
Right.
She has all the education she needs right here.
Yeah.
That's to say that for me, it's a philosophy of you know, as I have a little mantra that goes, don't worry, do. If nothing can be done, don't worry.
That's good. That's real good.
And that's in this little mantra that I say to myself on a extremely regular basis. I'm probably saying it several times a day.
Can you repeat
right?
that?
Don't worry, do. If nothing can be done, don't worry.
Yeah, that's real good.
Right? And so whenever I feel that, you know, feel that welling up of desire for difference, whatever it is, I say, okay, what action can I take to change that? Let's just say that, you know, the news is a perfect place to employ that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
I mean, you know, because 99.9% of it, there's not only nothing you can do about it, but you probably got wrong information to begin with, right? It's like, even if you could do something about it, you'd probably be doing the wrong thing because they lied to you.
Yeah.
Right. And so, you just have to kind of say, yeah, I can't do anything about that thing or that guy or his tweets or those people, or, you know, that I took the action that I could when I had a chance, and so did other people, and now we're here. And now what can I do going forward? What energy can I put out into the world or those around me or whatever that's going to actually, yeah, I can take that anger and that energy that I put there, and I can say, you know what? Gosh, you know, I have a far better chance making sure that my daughter has a good day.
Yeah.
That she's happy and that she's loving and caring, you know, because, you know, I'm playing the long game, right?
That's a good word. Yep.
there's very little I can do about this mess that we've created here. What I can do is I can work on her.
Mm-hmm.
I can help her. And hopefully by doing so, that change will come naturally in 20 years, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You want to change the world, it starts within the four walls of your home.
That is correct. And more importantly, it starts within the four walls of your heart.
Yeah.
Yes. The four walls of your mind.
Yeah.
The four walls of your soul. And that until you can learn how to get in touch with that, how to listen to that, how to navigate that, how to stretch it and change it, there's no chance you're going to be doing that for anyone else. Mm-hmm. And so Mindfulness from Mere Mortals, by the way, is for those who haven't read it, I'm assuming most haven't. It's just my very, very simple guide to meditation.
Mm-hmm.
And my proof that anyone can do it, and that some of the most useful places to do it are in those times where you find yourself stuck and frustrated. Grocery lines, for instance. You know, you're kind of in the line. You got the person ahead of you, you know, who's trying to write a check, and like they don't take checks, and the manager's getting called over. You know, and you're like, oh my god, come on! I got like four items here. You got like a basket. And you're like, what? Come on! And you're looking around, and oh my gosh, you know, there's got to be an express lane open, right? You know, come on. And, you know what? Instead of that, you can use that time as a gift. You can say, oh, yeah, okay. The universe has dealt me a situation where there's nothing I can do with my time that would be better than being here and being present with myself right now.
Let's go. Good word. Love it. Love it. So good. Patrick Roan bringing the heat today.
Well, I mean, if you want to know how to change those four walls of mind, heart, and soul, it starts first with listening to them.
Yeah. The inner light, the inner knower, the inner voice.
Well, just listening.
Yeah.
You'll be surprised what you hear when you listen.
Yeah.
Most of us go through the world not listening. So.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's a good word. I wrote a song once called Listen. One of the lines was, put your ears to your chest. Witness the restlessness. Every beat is one more victory. Good word. I'm like giving you a high five through the microphone here.
There you go. Slap it.
So, man, I love this. If our listeners want to reach out to you, want to follow you and your work, buy your books, social media, websites, where do you direct them?
Well, so right now I actually have literally as we're recording this, I have a good post up at patrickroan.com, which is my website, that basically says, okay, here's all the places you can find me. And if you're looking for this, go here. If you're looking for that, go there. So for right now, that's kind of where I'm directing people. But in general, patrickroan.com is a good place to start. I post most frequently to a sister site called patrickroan.net, which hasn't, eventually I'm going to integrate the two together into patrickroan.com, but that hasn't happened yet and won't be happening, at least for the foreseeable future. You know, so if you're looking for kind of regular stuff from me on a frequent basis, that's probably the best place to go. My Twitter account, patrickroan.com. I'm not on Facebook very much. I've got like 24 message requests from folks that saw the film and are like, oh, I want to friend you up on Facebook or whatnot. I'm gonna tell you right now, Facebook is for my real world friends and family, and it's a place where they can connect with me so I can ignore most of them. It's very useful.
That's where it belongs.
Because I really it's where it belongs. I am not a Facebook person. I find it a confusing, noisy mess, and therefore I'm infrequently there. And about the only time you'll find me there is when I get some message that says, hey, it's somebody's birthday. You should go say happy birthday. It's good for saying happy birthday to people. Yeah. That's what I use Facebook for.
It's where it belongs for Patrick Roan.
And obviously, you can all of my books, you go to patrickroan.com, go all the way down there for books. Click that.
Awesome.
Patrickroan.com/books. You buy all my books, and I can guarantee you that at least one of them will say something to you that makes your life a little bit better.
Beautiful.
And if it does, that's my only goal. That's the only, like, that's the whole reason I do it. It's because if I could change just one person, I'd be like, okay, done, yeah. Can go home.
Love it. Well, beautiful, man. Well, we are grateful for you and your work. Love the energy that you put into all this. And I know a lot of people are going to listen to this, have a lot of ahas, and I hope they do definitely pick up some of your words that you've written for further change. Man, just thanks so much for your time and generosity.
It was a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
You got it, Patrick. We'll talk soon.
Alrighty. Bye-bye.
I hope you guys enjoyed this episode with Patrick as much as I did. Make sure you go to patrickroan.com, find his work, purchase his books, follow him online. He's got a lot of great insight for all of us here. And as you approach this week, may you pause by the orchid, listen to the bluebird sing, and be love. Hey, before we go, I wanted to offer an invitation to you for an event that a couple friends of mine and I are going to be hosting February 19th through the 21st at the Redemptorist Renewal Center outside of Tucson, Arizona. This gathering is going to be called the First Oomph Gathering. You can find more information about this at oomph.cloud. And I just want to say this is going to be a gathering of people that seek to ask great, big, and lovely questions. The theme for this conference this year is going to be tending our gardens. And we're going to look at ourselves, we're going to look at our lives, we're going to look deep into our souls and ask the big questions of, what's the state of my garden? What do I want to bloom? Where does the soil need to be tilled? And what needs to happen in order to have just a beautiful life experience through the metaphor and the lens of the garden? It won't be the same without you. We hope you will join us. Again, go to oomph.cloud to find out more information about this. We do have some spaces available at this time. We'd love to see you there. Today's episode is brought to us by Holsti. Holsti explores what it means to live a life of intention and reflection through art, words, and action. Through their monthly subscription, Holsti examines themes inspired by the science of mindfulness, positive psychology, and ancient philosophy. Each month, subscribers receive letterpress prints illustrated by emerging artists, along with action lists and digital toolkits, encouraging further exploration and reflection. Holsti's journey began in 2009 with the viral popularity of their company manifesto, a call to arms around how their founders define success. They couldn't have imagined how much these words would resonate around the world. The Holsti Manifesto was called the next Just Do It by the Washington Post. It's been translated into 13 languages and has received an estimated 100 million social media views. With the encouragement of their global community, they developed the monthly Holsti subscription to help people put the words of the manifesto into action. Be sure to go to holsti.com/Ashton and use the checkout code Ashton, A-S-H-T-O-N, to get your first month's free of the Holsti subscription.